How's it going, everybody? We're back here on NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete Jensen here with Robbie Reese. How's it going, Rob?
What's up, Pete? Good to see you, my man.
Same here, man. We have Davey Satriano, his first appearance on the show since the NHL's pause. What's up, Davey?
Guys, I missed the water cooler visits. You know, that's what I miss most.
I know. We're doing the best we can here with the social distancing. And of course, with social distancing, we had to bring in our buddy Nick Alberga from up in Toronto. How's everything going up there, Nick?
Boys, I'm fantastic. I've pretty much finished everything off on Netflix. So I've got the WWE Network now. I'm watching pay-per-views from 1993. So that's where my life is at right now.
You are deep in the archives, man.
There's a lot of content out there to be consumed, but with each passing week, it's getting more and more scarce.
So I guess this would be the time we would be normally heading into playoffs, boys, but I was checking the standings this morning. It's one of the things I still do. I guess I'm just ingrained in the habit here, but I guess we could talk about some potential playoff matchups if it was based on point percentage. And the first one on the list would be top seed in the East, Boston, coming in at a 714 point percentage versus the Islanders at a 0.588. So, Davey boy, who's winning this one, hypothetically?
Pete and I discussed this yesterday, actually. And, we don't even know if the Islanders are going to score a goal in that one.
Wow. That's what you guys thought? Really?
Yeah, I mean, maybe if they got, like, Cizikas and Adam Pelich back, they could be one of those teams that could have a little bit more depth. But I don't know if either of those guys are going to put the puck in the net very often. So, yeah, we were saying sweep and maybe even a scoreless sweep. Not to put too much of the hammer on the Islanders. But I think with this format here that we did based on points percentage, it would be – a decimal point percentage, why they would get in over the Rangers right now, why they would get in over Columbus right now. So they'd probably be happy to be there, but might be a quick exit.
Did we not learn anything from last year? Come on.
No.
Like, I already made a pact to myself 3 months ago that when we got to the playoffs, I would say Boston would lose in the first round and St. Louis is going to lose in the first round. I got to stick with that, even though my ongoing feud with Islanders fans will continue for the next billion years. But you know, it's sort of intriguing to me if the season does restart. Momentum is completely gone, right? Mm-hmm. Any team can win. And I'm just so curious as to if the NHL restarts here at some point in time, whether it be August or next May. The injuries, right? And the guys who are banged up potentially coming back to those lineups, never underestimate that. And you sort of feel for like a team like St. Louis, who was really, really riding hot at Tampa Bay. Teams of that nature, because they were so hot and getting hot at the right time, and that momentum is completely gone now.
But on the flip side, Nick, it's almost a blessing in disguise for teams that were really slumping and just couldn't get it in gear before too. Like, so there's both sides of it. But swinging back to the Boston Islanders series, I think that's a little bit of a harsh take, the scoreless sweep. I don't really buy into the Islanders' offense, but I think it'd be a tight series. I think opening round against a Trotz team, you really never know what you're in for.
I think it's been somewhere close to like 10 years, maybe a little less, that the Islanders have beaten the Bruins in a home game. So that maybe speaks to where I'm trending with that pick. But anyway, yeah, I think it's an interesting debate looking at potential matchups and even maybe the reality if and when it happens. Like, which way would you lean in a series? Would you lean toward a high-flying team, high-flying offensive team, like, say, Toronto or Colorado? Or would you lean toward a heavier team, like a Boston or a St. Louis? I mean, or,
heavy.
You know, the game start.
Heavy. Okay. Heavy. That's where I'm leaning, baby. Nice. Heavy.
That is a good point, right? Because you look at St. Louis, you look at some of the teams in the last couple of years, they have played that heavy brand. And, you know, for those of you who do follow me on Twitter, I'm big in chirping the analytics community. I think, you know, they deserve some at times. I think analytics is a tool of the game, but to base everything on analytics, I think is a bit foolish. Certainly as somebody who covers the Maple Leafs, or very analytics heavy and year by year, I mean, it's the same old story for that team. So, I can't disagree with that, Bob. Like, I think physicality and being heavy in the playoffs is big. And just, I don't know, that Islanders team, they really didn't catch their stride for a while. And I wonder if you got to a playoff, you know, how they would, you know, change their game a tad to play a team like the Boston Bruins.
Well, I was looking at the other three matchups in the East. They're all great. I mean, you'd have Philly against Pittsburgh, Washington, Carolina, which we know from last year, and then Tampa Bay, Toronto. So those you can throw the records out right away. I mean, any team is capable of winning any of those.
There's nothing to say to that. You're right. Every team is capable of winning based on that logic. But I think I'm more on the side of Bob in this one with the heavy hitters. It always seems like, boys, over a seven-game series, the teams that come out to hit, they always grind the other team down. And we see it every single series. There's a fluky goal. There's a Patrick Hornquist butt goal. There's something like that that is the swinging point in a series. And usually over seven games, that heavy team's going to come out victorious.
Philly and where they're going to stand. I mean, you're looking at a possible matchup against Pittsburgh if and when it happens. I mean, Philly was one of the teams that had the most momentum and kind of has past playoff failures, past regular season failures in the back of their minds to begin with. So, like, starting from scratch, going up against, you know, a line with, you know, maybe at full strength, Crosby, Gensel, and Jason Zucker, and then Malkin and Rust on another line, that's – that's not a good thing for Philly, I don't think, coming out of the
break. Don't forget about that Gensel guy too, right? Because Pittsburgh was a team, and that was the MO of that team all season long, were the injuries and how they rallied through that. And that's why I still feel Mike Sullivan should win, you know, the coach of the year for the job he's done. But that series might intrigue me the most out of any series in the first round, the Battle of Pennsylvania. Yeah, you're right, in Philadelphia, they were so hot before everything shut down. And I would love to see Carter Hart in a playoff setting. Ivan Provorov, who really came out this season. Travis Sanheim, same story for him. And Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, every time those two teams get together, I don't care if it's the last game of the season, preseason, it's always a lot of fun to watch. And I think you add that young dynamic into the game, you just never know. That'd be great.
I look at the matchups, and I know one matchup, Nick, that's near and dear to your coverage is Toronto-Tampa Bay. I mean, two of the highest scoring offensive teams in the league. And Tampa Bay is a team, like, couldn't you see them flopping and losing to the Maple Leafs, even though the Maple Leafs had, you know, a down season, up and down all throughout?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting as we got closer to the playoffs. It's been such a weird year in Leafs land. Like, they have not been good for a long stretch of time. They were hot out of the gates under Sheldon Keefe, but you know, the fascinating thing to me, I think they had like 11 games left. They were 3 points up on Florida, and they had a game, or the Panthers had a game in hand. So it wasn't even solidified the Leafs are going to make the playoffs. But I think it was sort of astonishing to me that people, I'd rather have had Boston in the first round and not the Tampa Bay Lightning. I really feel like Tampa's got sort of, you know, something in their mind that suggests like, hey, last spring stunk and we want to reverse that. And, you know, to add, too, that maybe a Steven Stamkos could return if the NHL comes back. I think that'd be an awesome series. I think it would be high-scoring, fast-paced. There's so many dynamic players, not to mention the goaltending battle as well with Andrei Vasilevskiy and Frederik Andersen. And I think the shutdown matchups would be really, really intriguing, too, with a Victor Hedman and Morgan Rielly back healthy for the Maple Leafs.
Let me jump in here before I know Rob is chomping at the bit here. I know he's had some wonderful thoughts on Tampa throughout the season. I'll say this about that series. I, in no way, shape, or form, would I could imagine Tampa losing in the first round after what happened last year with the way they're playing, Stamkos potentially coming back. I'm sorry, as I look at that matchup, and quite frankly, as I look at the East, I see a Tampa-Boston Eastern Conference final, if that's the way the bracket shakes out. I don't even know if that's possible, quite frankly. Maybe they play in the second round. I'm not even sure. But those are the two best teams in the East, and I'll leave it to Robbie to kind of chime in on that one.
But the two best teams, they don't always win, and it's so rare. When is the last time we saw the two best teams in any conference in the conference final? Like, I cannot remember. There's always an upset. One of those teams is always out in round one. Now, I do think Tampa learned a lot last season. It was probably more of a bonding experience. I like that they got off to a slow start, found their groove, faced a little adversity this season. I think it added to the mix. For Toronto, this is a team that I picked in the preseason to go to the Cup final. That was way too aggressive on my behalf, seeing that this is the same team, same players under a different coach. We've seen the exact same style of play, the exact same soft, deking, it's fun to play that way on NHL 20, as I've been doing the past 2 weeks here in quarantine, but that's not going to win you a cup in real life. And sadly for my preseason pick, I think Toronto's got to find a new way to play, and they've got to find one quickly. And I just don't think with their personnel, it's going to happen. Now, I will say maybe they're going to advance through round one, maybe play 14 games in the playoffs this year, as opposed to seven in the past couple, but still, I think it's a building block kind of playoffs if and when it happens for them.
I got a question for the for everyone here on the panel. If the playoffs are shortened, or there's a different format, or it's completely different than what we've seen in the past, would you still want to see the Stanley Cup awarded? Is it possible that they do like a quick tournament sort of style and they don't give out the Stanley Cup? Is that possible, Davey?
That's not possible. If they do a little anything, they could play a one game winner take all. They could play a 31 teams are in. They're going to award the Stanley Cup because of the integrity and all that stuff. They don't want a 1919 where, you know, the flu influenza.
But integrity, just... Davey, I don't see that there is integrity in this model. I mean, you had a ton of injured players on the shelf. Now everyone's going to be back and healthy. It's just not what it would have been. It's just not a team rising from a Cinderella story with a bunch of guys banged up, overcoming that in the first couple rounds, and then getting these guys back in the final. Like, that's the stuff that we're used to seeing, and it's not going to be that way this year. I feel for guys like Ovi, who are 34 and maybe in like one of their prime little cup window at the tail end of their career, but otherwise I just don't think that this is truly the best product that it could be.
Well, it'll depend on who wins. I think, like, if Boston wins or Dallas wins, like a team that we think was built to win all along, and they end up winning, maybe it would look a little better. I think if a team like Carolina got healthy, got Hamilton and Vatanen back, and, you know, kind of spearheaded through the bracket no matter which way you sliced it, and they ended up winning or something, like something totally fluky, then you would be addressing those types of things. Whereas, you know, where a team who never would have won the cup prior to this pause ended up winning it, you know, that's maybe what I'm thinking.
I think the decision needs to happen before any of the playoff games are played. And listen, we're talking in, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But my point is, if they decide to do, say, an 8-team playoff, 4 East, 4 West, and then they play like best of 3 series, whatever it may be, does the team who wins that little tournament, do they really feel like they earn the Stanley Cup? I mean, are they going to give a Stanley Cup if one of those playoff scenarios, a shortened playoff scenario, happens? Alberga?
A couple things. Rob Reese sounds like a disgruntled fantasy owner in a league that somebody picked up Steven Stamkos and or Dougie Hamilton and or Jake Ensel.
I picked up Dougie, so pause that thought, Nick. I picked up Dougie. And if I win, if we have regular season games and I win the fantasy title, you won't hear a peep from me because I'm going to be embarrassed about it, man.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, we had this debate too, not to stray away from the topic quickly, but in my leagues, I had the debate too of what to do with the money. And I think there's a variety of ways you could handle it. But, you know, to answer your question, it's so fascinating. And I do think there is precedence here because just a couple of years ago, they didn't hand out a Stanley Cup. So I think you can ride off that. And I think ultimately it's going to come down to money, right? The NHL, how much money do you want to lose? And I think if Gary Bettman says, no, we're going to play some games, they're going to play some games. Is it going to look bad? Yes, likely. But I think the team who wins the cup, they won't remember, and, you know, right after they win the cup. I'm not a big fan of it, but I do think it's likely they finish off this season, at least right now.
And I think to Pete's point, the magic in that one is Petey Mrazek. I mean, I think even if the season does resume at some point, I don't think he's good enough, Pete, to win the cup. So I can't see that situation happening regardless. But I do agree with you. If a team like Boston or a team like Dallas or a team like Colorado that all looked pretty strong in the preseason, if they win, I mean, I don't think anyone is, A, going to be surprised, or B, saying, hey, I have a gripe with this.
Yeah, that's true. And I honestly like the idea of opening it up to more teams. Like, even if it's just a couple of the fringe teams, like, I would love to see an Islander Ranger play-in game to have the right to play Boston. I think the Rangers would win a game like that. And I think they would be a much more difficult test for a team like the Bruins. And that would be something cool to speculate about and to dissect, something that we've never seen before. Who knows if it's going to happen, but I think that's the type of situations where the league and the players can get creative and decide on something that can bring added intrigue. And of course, if people are still at home watching, I mean, they would probably have, you know, some record TV numbers, I think, across the board.
Well, here's the thing. If you include more teams, then you're probably playing less games per series. And to me, the moment you start drowning out that seven-game series and having to go through those seven-game series to win the Stanley Cup, then why even give out the Stanley Cup? Like, my point is, you can have this little tournament, do something different, have fun. Everyone's watching the games. But maybe if it's such a radical change and less games per series, maybe they just say, here's the champion of the season or the winner of the season, and don't give the Stanley Cup. We can move past this subject because, really, who knows what's going to happen and how this plays out. I just have to believe that a team may just not feel right taking the Stanley Cup if they play a tournament or something, or more teams get into the playoffs. Nick's waving his hand, ready to go. What do you got?
Yeah, I gotta disagree with this. I was posed this question on Toronto Sports Radio yesterday. Would Leaf fans feel different if they won the Cup? I could tell you firmly, every team who hasn't won the Cup in a long, long time, you give them the Cup, they're going to be happy about it.
Yeah, but then in Montreal, Nick, 2 hours over, you're going to have people. Shout out Schwartz. I got the mug right here, boys.
Oh, yeah, I love that smoke meat.
Yeah, smoke meats. Best smoke meats in the world. But if you go over and ask people in Montreal what they think about Toronto winning the Cup, they're going to say, well, hey, they won it during that season pause. Really awkward Peters. Timing. Yeah. I wouldn't have wanted to win it then. Of course they're going to say that.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And I've pondered this in 3 weeks of self-isolation. When I'm not watching Ozark on Netflix, I'm contemplating what's going to happen. But to me, there's just too many question marks going forward, right? Like, what do you do with free agency, the draft? You know, the offseason, setting up next season too, right, with the Seattle Meg Ryans coming into this league. What do you do? Because you don't want to hamper their entry into this league too. So there's a lot of questions. I'm happy I'm not making those decisions, boys.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about the East here, and we should talk about the West. And I think one of the best matchups that we thought would happen all season long, Colorado and Dallas. Guys, give me – because this matchup could very well happen in reality. A lot of these are situational things where we don't know if they actually will materialize, but there's a good chance if and when the season resumes and the playoffs happen that Colorado and Dallas will go head to head. Who do you guys like? Start with Davey over there.
Well, I had Dallas winning the Cup before the season. It didn't look good early on. They struggled, but they struggled a little bit before the pause too, but that would be a great series. You'd probably think it goes the distance, whether that's 7 games, 5 games, 3 games, whatever it would be, but those are two really good teams. They'd probably take a lot out of each other, but I would give the edge to Dallas just because of the goaltending and Bishop. I mean, yes, Colorado has better offense. The defense, you could say, is either a wash, or I maybe even lean towards Dallas despite Colorado having McCarr. But I just think with Bishop, we saw what he did last year. He basically kept them in that game and the series. They were one goal away from the conference final. I really like Dallas in that one. I think they have a shot at this, at winning the championship, the cup, what have you.
Nick, I know you're going to pick Colorado.
You know, I've had this – I just don't know with Colorado, right, in terms of a chemistry standpoint, right, because that team has just been so hampered with injury. Even, let's say, Phil Grubauer is ready to come back. Pavel Francouz has had that crease for the last, what, month and a half, and Grubauer has been in and out of that lineup. I just think from a chemistry standpoint, and that – you know, you can enter that into the equation and conversation too when it comes to the playoffs. Let's say they pick up in August – you know, Kadri could be back. You know, the full healthy lineup with Rantanen and McKinnon back in that lineup. How many games, how much time do they have to get things going? Because, again, to Bob's point earlier on, I think the likelihood of having 7-game series, if we do come back at some point in time, is very unlikely, at least in the first round. And it becomes sort of a more of a sprint than a marathon. I think that impacts teams that have been together, you know, longer. And I think you look at a Dallas team, you know, I think you can maybe expect a defensive-minded series in that one, but I just wonder about Colorado from a chemistry standpoint. But I can see both those teams doing something substantial. But I echo the sentiments of Davey. Like, I like the composition of the Dallas Stars and guys like Radulov who have had tough years, but I think those are sort of playoff-type performers.
I would go with Dallas here. I like the Avs a lot. I like that they have a complete team. They have a high-flying offense. It's really fun to watch on any given night. Even when their stars are out of the lineup, they still score goals. But I think when it's all said and done in the playoffs, it's always a little bit harder to score. Guys are clutching their sticks a little bit harder at that time of year. And I think with Dallas, I kind of like the fact that they had an underwhelming regular season offensively. I think if they can find a scoring touch early in that first series, it's going to be deadly for the Western Conference. And if I had to put money on any series, if I was putting $1,000 of my own money on any single one of these series, I would always choose the series with the better goaltender who can get hot. And I don't think there's another goalie in the NHL that can keep up with Ben Bishop when he's hot.
I don't know. It's like I feel like Colorado's offense is so much better than Dallas's that it might not matter, like, about the goaltending advantage, about the defensive system. I think that if it's like MacKinnon and Rantanen and then Kadri's back and Burakovsky's back, I mean, Colorado has so much deeper of an offense that I would actually side with Colorado to go against the grain a little bit here. But I've been thinking about this series for a couple of months now because it's so likely that it's going to happen one day. So I would lean Colorado. That's just my gut. And I would be interested to see if Francois started game one, whenever it happens, over Philip Grubauer, because I think he does deserve it.
Yeah, the West in general, guys, it's amazing to me how many teams you can truly say right now and see coming and going all the way and winning the Stanley Cup. And the only wonder with that, like, if you were to ask me right now, is a team from the West or the East going to win the Cup? I'd probably put money on the West. Just, I like a lot of those teams. You wonder, are they going to beat the hell out of each other, though, right? Even that matchup between Dallas and Colorado, let's say hypothetically they get together, just going to destroy each other for seven games, most likely. And it is a war of attrition come playoff time. And I think St. Louis proved it last year that you can play that grind style all the way to the Cup. But that's my wonder, especially in that Central Division. To get through that division is going to be very, very difficult, let's say that.
Well, you look at another matchup there at Vegas and Nashville. You look at Vegas, that's a pretty good matchup for them. And I think after what happened last year, I would say they would have a pretty good shot, especially if this is a, you know, the format has changed a little bit. I think Vegas is a team that, you know, this is something that they want, they need. They were on a good run before, so they'd be another team in the West that I'd say is behind Dallas. I would say Vegas is probably right there, might even be the favorites if we're to go into a tournament the way we are right now.
Yeah, I would say Vegas, you know, I was contemplating this probably 2 weeks before and getting set for Stanley Cup playoffs, just who I'd liked in the Western Conference. And I think basically, you know, I like Dallas, I like Colorado, St. Louis potential repeat. I just, you know, factored in maybe those teams beat each other up too much. You know, there are a couple teams in the Pacific, but again, when you look at the Pacific, at least in my opinion, it still goes through Vegas. And I just like the fact that, you know, in the first couple of years, they've been battle tested, right? They've played meaningful games. I think they've built up more depth. Even, you know, a small subtle trade picking up Chandler Stephenson, I think, has been outstanding for that team. And a guy who can play on the first line, he can play on the third line. So I like that fit quite a bit. Max Pacioretty was injured when the season went down, potentially coming back. You know, Mark Stone, there is some depth there. And Shea Theodore is a defenseman nobody talks about, but in my opinion, he is really, really turning into one of the best defensemen in this league. And then Marc-Andre Fleury, right? I think one of the reasons why they got Robin Leonard was to position Marc-Andre Fleury for success in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you have sort of that 1-2 monster. So, Davey, I'm right there with you. I really like the Golden Knights this season.
What about guys like a team like Edmonton? That's a team I'm really intrigued by after this pause. With all their young skaters, they can really score with anybody in the league. Now, yeah, their goaltending worries me a little bit, but I would say that's more of the intriguing teams. We know Vegas is a favorite. I think that one's been obvious since the season started, even before they got Robin Lehner, even before Shea Theodore became a top 10 defenseman in my fantasy rankings. But I would look at the intriguing teams like Edmonton as maybe one of those sleeper situations coming in after a long pause.
Well, and it's, you know, you wonder too, guys, you know, Connor McDavid, he's still, you know, relatively young, but you could potentially lose another year of Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? And I just think he's one of those rare players that we'll likely never see in our lifetimes again that really can change a game quickly and has the ability to win a series by himself. And just watching McDavid the way he is right now, peak McDavid, if you will, potentially for his career, and missing out on a potential to see him in the playoffs kind of stinks. Same with Draisaitl. You know, and I just wonder if Edmonton clearly had the depth to do anything substantial come the playoffs. But they had those two game breakers, right? And you always have to think, what if with guys like that? So that saddens me beyond belief. And not to mention the Battle of Alberta in Canada would be massive to watch if that came together, man, that would be great for ratings too.
And I think if the playoffs do happen, I think Edmonton's in really great positions. I think that they could spring the upset on Vegas in the second round. As much as we all love and respect what Vegas has on their roster, something has been off with that team all season long. And they have two good goalies, but it could, you know, lead to some controversy at some point in the playoffs. I mean, if you can make this a sprint of a postseason and have McDavid and Draisaitl play like 30 minutes a game, they're able to do that. And they have all the rest now and probably a little mini training camp before the playoffs come. So I think that's one of the best dark horse teams in the entire fake bracket that we have right now.
I was just sad to say, Nick,
that
yeah,
the Battle of Alberta that you brought up, the only thing I think Calgary's bringing to the table in that series is fighting. They might have more fights than goals. With the way that Johnny G and Monahan played this year, I think Edmonton would have a firm grip on that series.
The Lucic-Neal revenge series, right? I think it would be awesome. And I would just wanted to add too, like, never underestimate Dave Tippett. Somehow he got Arizona to a conference final years ago, right? So this guy seems to have the magic potion when it comes to a defensive scheme, whether it be in the regular season or the playoffs. And then you add the caveats of McDavid and Draisaitl. I would not want to play Edmonton. I'll say that.
Well, the way it would look now, it would be Edmonton against Vancouver. And I think Vancouver actually would have a great shot there, especially Markstrom coming back healthy. Their offense has been great. JT Miller. I mean, that's a series we talk. We know how good the Battle of Alberta would be, but Edmonton, Vancouver, sign me up for that series.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know about you guys. Vancouver reminds me a lot, and not to date it back, because you guys know I cover this whole league, but a team I cover in the Maple Leafs a couple years back that, hey, we're just happy to be at this party. A lot of things have been going great for us. We have Quinn Hughes. JT Miller's been a wonderful addition. I just wonder if Vancouver takes a step back next year. And again, we're still talking about this year, but I like what that team has put together. Let's not forget Markstrom was injured, right?
I don't think that's true though, Nick, because they have hockey god Adam Gaudette. They have Jay Beagle wins every single faceoff on the fourth line. They have guys that can muck it up on the back, and they've got big bodies like Tyler Myers and Jacob Markstrom. I mean, he's been as good as any goalie in the NHL this season when he's been healthy. I think Toronto, comparing them is okay because they have those flashy players up front. Vancouver does too. But I think that Vancouver has a little bit more chemistry early on, and it came a lot quicker than people thought this season.
I'll take that argument. That's fair. I don't know. These teams, like even a New York Rangers team, guys, going into next season, I was putting together my rankings and stuff. I don't expect any of these guys to have the seasons we expect, right? And same with Vancouver. Guys like Quinn Hughes. But I think it is lightning in a bottle, right? You get to the playoffs, and the thing you have to like about young teams in the playoffs, Grant, there are a lot of vets who seem to win. Last year, it was great to see Ryan O'Reilly win the Conn Smythe and finally win the Cup. But it is sort of one of those, like, we don't know where we are type of moments for young players. And that could benefit them, right? You don't have really the nerves or the anxious nature. You just get out there and play your game. And I wonder if a team like Vancouver got there, they're like, hey, we don't even know where we are. Elias Pettersson gets out there. Quinn Hughes gets out there. And then you have sort of the veterans to keep them in line. Never say never. And I think, again, the way I look at the Stanley Cup playoff, guys, has turned forever considering what happened last springtime. Where anything you thought was going to happen, the opposite happened. Expect the unexpected. I'm a huge reality show fan. Big Brother is my favorite. They always say that. And that's the way I feel about the playoffs now. Legitimate, any team can win after what I saw last springtime.
So we're talking about young players and what they are fantasy-wise moving forward. We also talked about the Vancouver Canucks. So we got a really good fan question this morning. Guys choose it in his keeper league at Sean19 Robinson. I have to choose between JT Miller and Victor Olofsson. What are your guys' thoughts on that one? Because we know the ceiling of Victor Olofsson because of his line mate. But Miller has been like a top 25 overall guy. How do you treat Miller's value moving forward?
Okay, I'll start this off. You know, as somebody who owns Victor Olofsson, I'm high on JT Miller. I was until I don't know what happened last year for Tampa, which led to his trade, and they got great value. I'm going to side with JT Miller. I think what happens in Buffalo next year is that they pick up some depth, but I think they would love to play Jeff Skinner in a perfect world with Jack Eichel. And I do think Skinner returns with Jack Eichel and Olofsson moves to the second line. Late in the season, he was finding some chemistry a bit with Mojo, 90, Marcus Johansson. And I think the numbers will dip off. You know, I was a big Olofsson guy going into this season. I thought he was great in his rookie year. I think it's fair to expect maybe a bit of a sophomore slump, a tad of one. And I think the exposure to Eichel, it won't be the same that it was this year. Because I think you pay a guy like Jeff Skinner, guys, you're not playing him on your second line. You pay Jeff Skinner that type of money, he's playing with your big boys. So just by that conversation and that correlation and the fact that JT Miller will be paired with a Pettersson long-term and into next year, I'm going to go with Miller.
Well, I think he's been probably one of, if not the biggest, you would say, for what teams paid guys in the offseason or when they traded for him. Getting a guy, we know how good Panarin is, but a guy acquired in a trade, he has to be the best fantasy performer, I would think.
I would say it all depends on what your need is. If you're looking for power play goals and goal scoring, obviously go with Victor Olofsson. If you want category coverage, bar none, Miller's your guy. And I think one thing, boys, that I learned in fantasy this season that I probably wasn't prioritizing enough the past couple of years is category coverage. I think I was caught sleeping at the wheel when the hits category was added as a standard cat on Yahoo, and I just didn't prioritize that enough in my full category coverage leagues this year. So I'm going to go with JT Miller and players like that a little bit earlier than I would have taken them last year.
And I'm really interested to see if Buffalo – I know we're not going to talk much about Buffalo here because they're in a bad situation all throughout, but they do have Dylan Cousins, the center prospect, who was ripping up the WHL this year, 85 points in 51 games. Maybe that's a way that they could get more value out of either Skinner, or if they do, like Nick said, put Skinner back up with Jack, they could have – Olofsson still be in good hands with Dylan Cousins. That's just like a wrinkle fantasy-wise that I wouldn't take lightly in a keeper league.
They do have Ralph Kruger, though, the Buffalo Sabres. So you have to remember that Ralph is at the helm. One question I wanted to toss out to you guys, though, and Nick sort of brought it up, players that have had incredible seasons this year that are just going to drop off the shelf next year, or you know, you wouldn't want to draft too early or overreact to the season that they had this year. Where's your head at on that? We'll start with Petey, because Petey's just chomping. Look at him chomping.
Well, we've been talking a lot about Rangers. We've been talking a lot about defenseman rankings. You can find Robbie's rankings, top 50 on NHL.com/fantasy from last week. And one guy that we got a lot of grief for not having in the top 10 was Tony DeAngelo, maybe the biggest surprise among all fantasy defensemen this season. That is a guy that I think, especially with Adam Fox in the picture and also trending up, and then there's still Trouba there. Tony DeAngelo, I would not treat as a top 10 fantasy defenseman. I would rather take him 15 or later in future drafts. What do you guys think about Tony D?
I mean, I agree 100% with you, Pete. It's if I need a number one D on my team and I've waited to let the top 10 guys slip, yeah, I'm pretty happy to get Tony D, maybe a Neil Pionk, but those are two guys you have to look at in a similar situation where, you know, hey, for the Rangers specifically, like they've got other guys on the back end there that can pass, that can shoot. So they could have Trouba on that power play. They could have Adam Fox on that power play if Tony D went a little cold. That's my only worry there. I think Tony D is a better player, but, you know, hey, Neil Pionk, Tony D, I would not want as my number one fantasy defenseman.
Across the board, I'm staying away from the Rangers next year. Everybody's going to be hot on Igor Shesterkin. I probably think the one guy I'm dabbling on outside of Panarin, clearly Panarin's a top 10 pick right now, Jacob Trouba. I think, you know, I have this theory, and I don't even know if it's true or not, but guys who sign monster contracts, at least going to new teams, their first year is usually not too good. Their second years are sort of blowout type strong years. And I think Jacob Trouba is going to come back with that again. I always like to lean on what these guys get paid, and it happened a couple years back. I took a chance on Andre Kopitar in year two, and he ripped it up for me. But Trouba is a guy at 8x8. He's their number one defenseman. You know, I think it's great to see guys like DeAngelo and Fox really, really step up. But I think when push comes to shove, they got Trouba to be their guy in the back end, and he has shown in the past, whether it be with Winnipeg, and there were a couple moments with the Rangers where he can really run a power play. And I just think exposure alone to Artemi Panarin can change everything, right? Ask Ryan Strome, who was in a contract year this year and just was unbelievable this season for the New York Rangers. I just don't know what you're going to pay him D'Angelo got that exposure too. So everything runs through Panarin on Broadway Boys, that's for sure.
Does that include Zibanejad, who Nick, like everybody on Twitter's been on the last couple of weeks?
Yeah.
Saying, oh my God, this is a top 15 next year pick.
No.
Not touching it?
I'll touch him, but I'm not jumping. I think off the top of my head, I have Zibanejad around 40 to 45. I know some people will have him top 15, top 20. And again, that's what I love about lists. I love that they're up for discretion. You might disagree with me. I think that's great. But I just think he had that type of year where just everything went perfectly, that I think there's going to be a bit of regression there. But I do like what Zibanejad brings to the table, but I'm not jumping. The New York Rangers are, you know, in general, from a fantasy perspective, are my most fascinating team going into next season. Because what do you do now when there's expectation for David Quinn, right? Everybody knows who you are. Everybody knows about Igor Shesterkin. Will there be a bit of regression because you're now the hunted as opposed to the hunter? And it's happened to a lot of teams in the last couple of years. So New York's a team I'm really, really looking forward to seeing what happens here.
Well, the thing about the Rangers is we're pretty sure next season their goalie situation will be sorted out. They're not going to be carrying these three, dragging it on for another season. I like what I've seen out of them, specifically Zibanejad. I mean, who knows if he's going to score 40 whatever next season, but he's done very well. And also, have you guys heard his new single? I mean, that's a pretty good piece of work. So might have his fantasy stock boost up because he's keeping busy during the pause.
Yeah, I don't really care about his music. I care that Chris Kreider is signed.
Wow.
I care that Chris Kreider is signed on long-term to play on his line because that's been one of the best duos in the whole league fantasy-wise this year. And while I understand Nick's concerns about the Rangers, I'm excited about their ceiling next year. I think that with Panarin and Zibanejad on different lines like they have been this year, I think that they have a ceiling to be one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference.
Pete is too high on the Rangers. I think Nick is a little too low on the Rangers. I fall sort of in between.
Well, you're the voice of reason, Bob Bender.
Pete's been way too high on the Rangers. Robbie, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I like Quinn as a coach. I like the makeup of the team. I do have some concerns about Shesterkin. I don't think they're falling off a cliff, and I don't think they're winning a Stanley Cup. I like their players. I like their makeup, but Pete's too high on them.
I'm going to come in as the mediator here. Pete, you're bang on about Chris Kreider. That is an instrumental player that I am glad they re-signed. I know it's a bit of an unpopular opinion because everyone in their armchair GM nowadays hates re-signing players. I'm not sure what that's all about, but it is what it is. And then I'll side with Nick on the fact that Shesterkin's not going to catch anybody off guard next season. All the tape's going to be there. All the best shooters in the league, Ovechkin, Pasternak, et cetera, they're going to know where to pick this guy's pocket clean. So, yes, except definitely see a little bit of drop in Chesty, but two factors we are forgetting here, boys. No one's brought it up. Davey, think about the first and second pick in the 2019 NHL draft. We have Jack Hughes in Jersey, and we have Kaapo Kakko for the Rangers. I want to see a big year out of one, if not both of those players.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen even next season, personally. I think it's going to take a few years for these guys. But if I had to pick Kakko, I would think has a better chance. I mean, Jack Hughes obviously hasn't been the year he wanted or the team wanted, but I don't see it getting much better for him next year. Like in a full season, maybe 50 points, I would say, on that team.
But how did it not work out for Kakko on that top power play with Zibanejad having a career year, with Panarin absolutely popping off, with Ryan Strome finding this offense out of nowhere? Like, how did that, Pete, not work out for Kakko this year?
It would have worked out if David Quinn took a page out of Larry David's playbook and actually played Kakko and didn't, you know, he's a rookie. He's going to have these mistakes. So you need to give him more leverage then. That was the problem early on.
I mean, he hasn't been a fixture on either the top six or a first power play. I mean, that's, I think, how it's happened. I totally agree with you. Like, the fact that he wouldn't even be in our top 200 rankings throughout the season after how the Rangers are a top 10 offense and a top 5 power play is mind-boggling for sure. But I think if he just slots into the top six and plays with Zibanejad and Kreider, or plays on the other line with Strome and Panarin, it's a great spot either way. And I think it's a spot that Quinn could have him earn over time as early as next season.
And I guess at least for Jack Hughes, you can make the argument, well, he's got to play center. He's got to play both ways. It's hard for a young player, and especially because he's a little undersized too. to have that full responsibility. So yeah, Davey, maybe you're right. Maybe that's a pause next season, but I still think when you have that draft stock in real life, in fantasy, those guys are always going to be reached for. It's even because they had down years, I think you're still in round 10 or 11. You're still going to have to reach a little bit higher than you wanted to take a player like that.
I just think too, to add and to finish up this, Todd, it reminds me a lot of like the Heischer and Nolan Patrick draft, right? Where the first year we really had expectations. A lot of people were jumping, you know, I myself had both Hughes and Kakko in my top 100 and they were really, really disappointing. But I think at the back of the head, you're always wondering, hey, what if I'm that fantasy owner can turn around this player or he can get that moment, you know, that first power play and assignment. I think certainly watching the Rangers, David Quinn has this this love for Brendan Lemieux, and he plays him in his top six, plays him on PP1 as opposed to Kakko. So I do agree wholeheartedly with what you're all saying. It just comes down to utilization, and I just like the exposure, the potential exposure at least, that you know, you can have in New York as opposed to Newark right now with the New Jersey Devils, who are clearly retooling right now, we'll say.
Yeah, very true. One big injury update from over the weekend. We saw Sunday morning, I think, Seth Jones was skating on the ice at the Blue Jackets facility. His first skate, like you said, since his ankle injury, hasn't played since early February. I mean, that's another guy. We've been talking about all this speculation and teams getting healthy. What if the Blue Jackets get Seth Jones and Oliver Bjorkstrand back and sneak into a play-in game or sneak into the playoff bracket?
Yeah, no one was really talking about them, but they're the team that you look this season, they've had more man games lost to injury than anyone, both goalies, the defensemen, forwards. But the irony here is if we went by points percentage, they wouldn't even be in the playoffs if we just did the normal 8-8. So that would be tough to see because they're finally getting healthy, and no one really thought after losing Bobrovsky, a Panarin, and a Duchesne that they would be even close to a playoff spot. So I would be, as an NHL fan, as a hockey fan, it would be kind of sad to not see them get a chance, especially now that they're getting healthier.
I don't really have any thoughts on this other than, Dave, can you get your internet service provider on the phone, please, and have him work on your connection because it's very, very, very shaky. Please, let's work on that.
It's not like everybody's on their internet right now too, right?
Well, yeah, it's completely overloaded. No, we need more bandwidth. I will say, though, it's kind of sad that Columbus' 0.57 points percentage is the same as Toronto's 0.79. Like, how is that possible? I don't understand that. That says everything you need to know about Toronto this season.
It does. And I think, again, good buddies in John Tortorella and Mike Sullivan, I think, atop my list for the coach of the year. They've just done, you know, even you look at Torts, right? You look at that team and sort of the narrative coming in. It was going to be a bit of a rebuild for Columbus. And even the run that Elvis Merzlikins went on, you know, you're right, Dave, in bringing up all the man games. Even Cam Atkinson was out of this lineup. And not to mention Pierre-Luc Dubois, who I thought would take another step in the direction this year. He's been sort of up and down all season long. It's been really, really impressive, you know, what they've pieced together. Not to mention Zach Werenski, about midway through this season. And it seemed to align perfectly with Seth Jones going down. And Werenski really took over and was leading the NHL in goals by a defenseman at the time of everything shutting down. So I just don't think you want to ever sleep on teams like that who have that commitment to defense, especially in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and can ride the hot wave of a system for sure.
So we talked about the Blue Jackets and they're getting healthier by injuries. But I'm wondering from you guys, which team do you think would benefit the most if – you know, the playoffs or the season did resume because of an injured guy that could come back? You know, Gensel for Pittsburgh, Tarasenko, maybe St. Louis. I'm just wondering what your guys' thoughts are.
Well, one thing that just popped into my head is that right before the pause, Cam Atkinson was going to come back from injury. So that's another guy, another top flight player for Columbus that would be back if and when the season resumes. My answer is Colorado. I was you know, excited about them just because in that series against Dallas potentially. But I do think because of so many pieces coming back from Grubauer, McKinnon, Rantanen, Kadri, Burakovsky, five guys, that's a team I would look at completely differently if they're fully healthy. What do you guys think?
I'm going to go with Tampa, Stamkos, right? He was supposed to come back in mid-April. To add a guy of that ilk back in that lineup, they were relatively healthy. Again, my big-time concern with Colorado is all the guys and finding chemistry. And, you know, let's say you come back, let's start the playoffs right away. These guys have not played with each other in like 4 months, right? As opposed to Tampa, a guy like Stamkos has missed significant time over the last couple of years, but he's a guy who seemingly you can just insert back in and say, hey, we're going to put you with Point. We're going to put you with Kucherov. We're going to put you with Palat. And he would find his way after a couple of games. So I think Stamkos and Tampa would be the team to watch, at least in my opinion.
I'm going to take it a different direction. I think a team that was slumping beforehand was the Washington Capitals. They could not get it in gear. They look good one game, then they would drop three in a row. I think this is a situation for a team like that that wasn't playing well. They kind of reset. They were pretty healthy all season long, all things considered. But I think just having a little bit of a reset moment, hey, if they come back, win that first game, they get hot, then they're looking back with their second Stanley Cup trophy. But I will say, to Nick's point there, I do think the Lightning are in a similar boat too, where Stamkos made that difference. I think they were 3-7, they had a pretty bad record, maybe 3-7-0 in their past 10 before he went on pause. So they needed a little bit of a breather too. And I think that's a team. They've played a lot of hockey the past few years. They need some rest. They've gotten it. So I think I wouldn't expect to see the Bolts take any of that time off. They would come out hot for sure.
I think I have to agree with Peter here and take the Colorado Avalanche. And you brought up Seth Jones is how this topic was brought up, and you brought up Merzlikins as well. And before we put a bow on this, I wanted to tee you guys up on this as I take a look at the NHL greatest moments so far bracket, which, by the way, there are no seeds. The left side of the bracket is all the Western Conference. The right side of the bracket is all the Eastern Conference moments. And as I look at these 64 moments that occurred until the pause came, to me, it's an absolute no-brainer what the winner is. Now, I don't know where you guys stand on this. I'm going to let you guys tee it up and discuss, and then I'll give you the no-brainer.
Yeah, it's got to be Svechnikov to me, guys, because everywhere I look, even on these best-of shows on TV, because no sports are on, it's all the lacrosse goal and how many times it's been duplicated. I just think to have the presence of mind, and just more so how big that goal was for his team, in the game, I have to go with Svechnikov. How about you guys?
Well, there's two lacrosse goals on this thing because Forsberg also makes the list. But me, that was a great goal. Everyone noticed it. But I would think, to me, it was that save that Fleury made. I know Mr. Pete Jensen had to write about it, or will for our staff picks. But that was a great save. And the snowball effects it had, right? I mean, Babcock got fired. They lost that game. I mean, that goal, that save just had so many implications. But also, it was a great save. One of the greatest saves. So that
fitting that the goalie master is taking the save. I mean, the only argument that I have there, Davey, and this is not to take anything away from the save, but Fleury has had so many of these stops. It's almost like after a while, you know, seeing an Ovechkin deke across the center, top shelf goal, it's like, yeah, that was awesome. But, you know, it's kind of on brand for that player.
And there have been, like, what, 7 or 8 coaching changes, and that was the first domino. So it felt kind of like, because the pressure was mounting, they were in that great atmosphere in Vegas, it was like he, like, ripped their hearts out, and then they had to, you know, go scrambling the next morning to make a coaching change, and then all the other coaching changes happened around the leagues. A lot of them seemed like they were kind of trigger happy moves, and of course there were some others with off the ice stuff going on, but it was just kind of like it led the way for one of the biggest storylines of the whole season, like Davey was saying.
What's your answer, Pete?
I would say the same one. I mean, I think one of the only, I don't know if it's on there, is the Zibanejad fifth goal on there. I mean, that was one of the most exhilarating games I watched all season too, so those would be my two, but I would lean with Fleury just because it was totally electric.
Robbie. If we're talking greatest moments, how are we not talking David Ayers?
Yeah.
That's the only one that I'm really concerned about. I mean, every year a player is going to score 4 or 5 goals. Every year the saves are going to be made. When is a backup goalie come in, beat the Toronto Maple Leafs on home ice? I mean, it's ridiculous. That storyline, everyone was talking about it. It seemed like we were writing 4 stories a day for 2 straight weeks on that moment.
I say it's a no-brainer. I'm on board with Robbie. David Ayers has to be the winner, clear cut. Talked about it for days after. You don't see it. The fact that he beat the Maple Leafs is a big point for me. I mean, this is one of the most storied franchises in the NHL, and David Ayers comes in and beats him. Now, the others that I were sort of debating. The left side of the bracket to me is totally irrelevant. There's not one. There's not even one that comes to mind that can win. But it's Svechnikov, it's Ayers, and then the underrated one that's not going to win is Bobby Ryan coming back and having a hat trick.
Yeah,
now, that's a pretty nice moment too. But I have to go with David Ayers. I'm siding with Rob Reese there.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I'll be honest, sort of forgot about that goal. And I was wearing the Carolina Hurricanes T-shirt, and I forgot about David Ayers' night, and it happened like 2 months ago, or not even less than that. You're right. There isn't anything in that conversation. I wake up sometimes and wonder, was that a real broadcast that I came on air with? The Toronto Maple Leafs have four players combined make around $40 million, and they were trigger scared against a 45, whatever age he was, but a guy who should not be playing in this league, a beer league goalie, was going home, you know, bringing milk home for his family after the game, and they beat him. Like, it was surreal to watch that in person. Right away when Mrazek went down, I looked to my co-sport Stelic, and I'm like, the Leafs have to win this game. They were down three. I'm like, there's no way they don't win this game. And then they came out with maybe one of the most embarrassing performances in franchise history. That added to the story, but you're right. It's David Ayers by a mile.
Good job by Bobby and Robbie calling that one the unanimous one, because you've convinced me for sure.
And two honorable mentions I wanted to bring up before we wrap it is Kubalik scoring 30 goals. I mean, I know it's not a highlight reel thing. It's not everything. Everyone's not going to talk about it. But the fact that he came out of nowhere as a 24-year-old rookie from overseas and netted 30, and we had this draft class coming in, that says a lot. And the second thing is Quinn Hughes, his 53 points are the most among rookie defensemen since Nicklas Lidström. That guy was pretty good. He's a Hockey Hall of Famer. So I just want to give a props to Quinn Hughes there, and that's probably going to tee him up for a future Hall of Fame career. And I don't feel any remorse saying that so early in a young player's career like that.
Good stuff. And Cale Makar is going to be right there with him. So that's one of the best storylines for an otherwise underwhelming rookie scoring season. I mean, out of those, there have been three good rookie goal scoring forwards between Olofsson and Kubalik and Gurianov. But, you know, we thought the expectations would be so much higher for the other guys that we mentioned. So kind of a whimper in that regard for Hughes and Taco.
All right, boys. Well, it was good seeing all of you. I hope everyone's continuing to stay safe, and hope we can chat some real hockey stuff soon here.
Bob Bender, Dave Satriano, Nick Alberga, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, thanks for listening, and we'll be back with you again soon. NHL Fantasy on Ice.